Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, a podcast for embedded Linux developers.
Hi, this is Maciej Halasz with TimeSys, and I have with me Gene Sally.
Hi there.
Sorry I missed our last episode, Gene. I was again on the road, but I heard that you did a fantastic job there.
That makes one. That makes one person.
So today we're going to continue to some extent one topic or several topics that you started last time, and today we're going to talk about the code analysis tools.
Yeah, well I know the last podcast, I sort of mumbled on about different kind of tools and picking the right tool for your job. And one of the things we want to talk about for this series is to discuss, you know, what kinds of tools and what certain tools do attack certain problems. And the problem that we're going to attack for tools this time around is code analysis.
Mm-hmm. And probably you talked during the last podcast about development tools, per se, IDEs, and what
I talked a lot about my my collection of power tools. I didn't get to talk about my Sawzall, which is my favorite. But
I didn't hit
that topic.
Going back to our actually podcast, Gene.
Oh, sorry.
there are several tools that every developer in the Linux world would have in their little area where they play with Linux. Uh-huh. And there are development tools, there are debugging tools, there are finding tools that allow them to pick into the code for various optimizations or bug tracking purposes, right?
Yeah.
And you can do that using probably hardware-assisted process with JTAG.
Yeah.
But in most cases, I'm not sure if in most cases we're going to talk about it a bit more. You want to actually take a look at the execution flow of your application and maybe see what's going on, how the memory gets allocated, that's what we're going to focus on today.
One of the things I wanted to point out is that there's a lot of bugs you can code that you really can't find with a debugger. Something like a single stepping through your code is a very ineffective tool for finding an out of bounds problem, and it's a very ineffective tool for finding, whenever you're touching a global, inappropriate at the wrong spot. So, when people talk about debugging tools, frequently what first comes to mind is the debugger they sit in front of and pipe, next step mm-hmm. next, and look at the memory. But there are a lot of other tools you can run against your code that will, debug common, semantic coding problems.
Right. Plus, when you are a developer, you got certain habits as to how you write code, which, might be actually an excellent habit, might speed up your development time and how you write code. But it might not be efficiently optimized by the compiler.
Sure.
Or, for example, the memory allocations might not happen as you thought they are happening.
Correct.
Right? So...
Or other problems where you just don't realize, how your program behaves because it's big enough and complex enough that you really don't know where that inner loop is.
Right.
I don't know, back when I was first learning how to do coding for real, right, when my boss told me, he's like, your program is only as fast as the inner loop. And I thought,
interesting.
What is he talking about? And then after a while, sort of gelled on me as to what that meant. And that's where I found profiling tools to come in handy, because most times with something reasonably complex, you don't know where your inner loop is.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're dealing with other systems, sometimes you're unaware of where the delay is because it's out of your control with respect to you being a systems an application programmer. I mean, you might find yourself waiting in some routine for a while only because that does a call out to set up a socket or something else. And without that, without having a tool that does some of that analysis for you, finding it just by looking at the code is
almost impossible.
Yeah, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, you're biased because at that stage you believe that your code is 100% correct.
Oh, sure.
And it's very difficult to find that inner loop, right?
Yeah.
And it sounds like your previous boss actually did some research on those code analysis tools that we are going to talk about today.
Well, this is way old school. This is back when
Well,
your inner loop was this thick thing of punch cards, I think it's.
Well, that just shows how old this kind of problem is and for how long those analysis tools have been around.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about two separate groups of analysis tools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in our previous discussion, I mean, offline, not during the podcast, you identify them as dynamic and static tools.
Yeah, for code analysis. Yeah, that's the bucket they tend to fall into. It's a, and, you know, the dynamic tools are things that look at your code while it's running, and the static code, static tools never run the code, but they look at it and find out and ferret out errors that are fairly common.
Do they actually find the same types of issues, or are they used for different purposes?
Well, there is some overlap. Some of the tools look for things like null dereferences, which you can find either, it's easy to find them during runtime, right?
Yeah.
That's when your program goes boom, right? But they do look for, there is some overlap because there's some constructs you can see it, you can see them in the code before it ever runs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also see it as it runs. So things like in the bits that do instrumentation, like you pointed out, there are tools. Oh, hey, let me name a few so I can talk about them. So we can just reference them. There are three of them which are the biggies with respect to dynamic analysis. I guess the other thing I wanted to point out is tool-wise, I wanted to bound my conversation just to things that are, you know, free tools, mm-hmm. that are licensed under GPL.
Yep.
There's a lot of commercial tools that do this as well.
Right.
Some of them arguably do the job a little bit better than the free tools. But let's just stick to the free tools.
I think that free tools actually cover the same functionality as the commercial tools.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that sometimes because they cover, well, maybe even wider functionality than commercial tools, they don't have that focus and make the use a bit more difficult.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So the three biggies that you find with dynamic analysis for memory leaking is Electric Fence, M-Patrol, and Valgrind.
Interesting names.
all cool names. As a matter of fact, I wanted to make sure, this is, believe it or not, we actually do research, as we've managed to deceive our audience otherwise. But they've been out there for a while, and Valgrind is actually a quite an impressive tool. And I look at it, it's spelled Valgrind.
Mm-hmm.
And you say it grinned as in smiling. And so I have been mispronouncing that my entire Valgrind using career.
So is there like a open source project, I assume, that where you can go and find out more about what Valgrind is?
All three of these are separate open source projects.
Is it valgrind.org?
You know what? If you just search for Valgrind,
you'll
find it. I can't remember. I know I typed up some notes. Which of course I didn't bring with me. So, if you search, you'll search, you'll find Valgrind. Same with M-Patrol.
So, how does it work? I mean, how does? Let's talk about Valgrind, for example. And I have an application that my boss has asked me to optimize because my module that I've developed does not meet certain performance requirements and consumes more time than or Ooh. Memory than I'm supposed to.
Ooh. So let's do a division right here. So let's look at the dynamics for the dynamic tools. I did want to talk about some of them as being memory checkers,
mm-hmm.
and then some of them as being performance analyzers.
Okay,
so that's okay.
Fair, yeah,
your question is entirely valid, right? The classic one. Well, the system's running out of memory, and the system running slower.
So,
two use cases.
Amongst those three tools, is there can we divide them according to that functionality?
That's a good point. So, Electric Fence and M-Patrol. As a matter of fact, Electric Fence, I think, has been forked again into another project called Duma. But that's a whole other thing. But Valgrind is a tool that does both checking, profiling, so what runs when, and it also do memory detection. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, Valgrind has a pretty interesting architecture in that you can even write your own little plugins.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sort of a growing
for
list of those
automated analysis.
Yeah, semantic analysis. So let's talk about M-Patrol for a second. That's used by a lot of embedded engineers because it has the widest target support.
I see.
The way these tools work, especially for something like memory checking, mm-hmm. Memory profiling, is that they will substitute malloc and free. with their own malloc and free implementations.
Okay, so let's step back for a second and talk about how the end user, where's the starting point? I go to that open source, I download certain stuff, right? What's that stuff? Is it a library?
That's a good point. So it's a library and an usually an executable that you run your program in the context of.
Okay.
So if those out there that use GDB server, do GDB server space, some information about your target space, name of your program, these tools work primarily the same way, except during link time. When you're linking the program, you also have to link in a library and set up a few symbols.
I see.
So that when you do the compilation, it does properly substitute out.
You basically do the instrumentation by specifying flag during the compilation and then appropriate symbols from downloaded libraries for, let's say, Valgrind get used, included by the linker.
Yep.
And that's how you hook up to already existing routines like malloc, you said, right? It's kind of like piggybacking on malloc functionality, plugging in the hooks so that you can peek into the code as you execute.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly how it happens. Architecture.
Very smart.
It's a clever implementation. And what happens is then you run your program, and as malloc and free are called, these programs say, okay, I can match this free with this malloc. And as long as the count becomes zero, well, then things look good. If you have a situation where you have a malloc and that pointer is never passed back into free to get returned to the heap, then it'll flag that as an error.
I see.
And those sorts of problems are, by examining code, looking at it, are very difficult to spot.
I'm sure.
And it's even more so true whenever you have a program that depends on some libraries, even that you've written internally, that maybe produce, they may malloc a pointer and they may expect someone else to free it later. And so even in the context of you looking at that library, you may be able to examine it and notate with your hands notate that your mallocs and frees are indeed matched. But once you pass that pointer out to the wider world, the user of that may not know the correct handling semantics and therefore may leak.
Right.
Well, it's a good thing you gave it. So the thing I want to point about leak is that's a common technical term for whenever you have memory that you've allocated off of the heap, so off of the free store of memory, that you never tell the memory manager that you're done with it.
Right.
And therefore, it can never reuse that.
You can actually track it. Yeah. So working with a lot of customers in the Linux domain, that's been actually a fairly common problem amongst the applications. And the worst ones, I guess, are usually the ones that are, as you said, not visible to the allocator. And very difficult to track, very slow memory leaks. Applications that are deployed in the field usually, like for example in the automation, they run nonstop for months, years.
Yes.
So every single memory leak can be really a very significant problem to the project.
Sure. And whenever you have those problems in the field, what I like least about that is that the code will die. And you don't know, you're really not sure why. And it's very difficult to diagnose after the fact in the field. And so if you spend a day or two or three or five and run through and make sure that you are in fact, tight, you're not leaking anything, you'll save a substantial amount of effort in the field.
Right. Because unfortunately, in most cases, the only way to, let's say, get the application back on track is to reset the board, reset the card. And that's not always possible.
Yeah. And, if you have a routine too that's leaking, 10 bytes an hour.
Right.
It's going to be a failure that even the user may not perceive as being a software failure. And they just may view somehow the product as being, they'll form a bad view about the product itself.
How long, how much time does it take to ensure that there are no memory leaks in a you know, medium-sized application or small application.
Let's the typical that. Thing. So if you instrument something with mpatrol, right? Mpatrol, because it's dynamic, and this is where I want to talk about static things in a second, because this is important.
Right.
Mpatrol, because it's a dynamic system, really only checks the code that's run.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing about that is that if you want to really memory check your program, you need to run every line of code.
Right.
And that's the interesting thing is you can get, and I'm going to talk a little bit later about profiling, you can do pass counts online. So you can combine the two things together and get, you know, did I have all the coverage?
Right.
Did I leak memory?
Right.
You still won't say, did you get all of them? Right. Because if you're the classic bitter QA person, just because you didn't find any defects under the cases that you tested it doesn't mean none exist. But in terms of the time, it's important to point out, for a dynamic memory linker, you need to be able to make sure you have good code coverage. You really can never get 100% code coverage unless your program is trivial in size.
Right.
But you can certainly push towards that limit.
Right.
And you'll find yourself putting a week or two of time into making sure that you did get the coverage you expected and you fixed your bugs.
Some more extensive programs, and especially programs that were tested in, let's say, more of a real-time environment, in those applications, customers tend to leave the instrumentation inside a code because removing that certain instrumentation would offset timings. What is the overhead?
Substantial
of a typical
substantial
and percent for Walgreens
100%. Yeah, 100%. Wow. Yeah, you pay with respect to performance substantially. I mean, the code is the projects aren't really designed to be run. There's two things you pay for, right? Number one, it does a lot of data collection, so you have a
startup
substantially greater memory consumption as the program is running. And then in order for it to do its tracking, you pay on every malloc and every free. Right. And for a lot of programs, that's a fairly substantial penalty.
Right.
So I would not recommend, you know, leaving something that's been instrumented or leaving the instrumentation. I would not recommend leaving the instrumentation in the code and sending it out to the field.
Yeah. So there's actually, I guess, the conclusion to be drawn here is that there's some instrumentation that it's okay to leave inside the application, but when it comes down to code analysis instrumentation, it's better to
leave home without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely want to leave home without that. No doubt about it.
So we talked about Walgreens, and tell me a bit about Electric Fence, because the name itself is very interesting. Oh, no. Do you plug it into an outlet?
No. Yeah. No, it was just designed to, the name of it was just out there to invoke the image of something that guarded your program.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did mention that I think the person that wrote that, his last name was Parent. I just can't remember his name. And I know there's been a little bit of a fork for that that's called Duma. And that's slightly better. That's detect unintended memory access.
Mm-hmm. So what are the differences between Electric Fence and Walgreens? How do they differentiate? Do they collect the different types of data?
Well, they collect roughly the same data. So they check for memory leaks and unintended memory access. And that's either access through a pointer that hasn't been properly allocated, which if you think about it, can actually suck up a lot of code. Right. And they can also check for things like walking over the bounds of an array.
Okay. That's a tricky one too.
Yes. And so in any case, the differences come out in reporting and some of the documentation that's offered with the software. And in this case, you know, I happen to have a preference towards Valgrind because it is documented better, and it does have wider platform support as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Valgrind is designed so that you can, you know, create your own plugins and do other sort of operations on the code once it's running.
So I guess we talked about the performance impact and all that and how you instrument, but is there a graphical interface? How do I watch all those references? Is it a command line based? Is it I run my application, right? I have it instrumented, but is there some sort of a visualization tool?
Yeah, there's parsers for these. Although typically it's not part of the tool itself. I know something like, you know, Electric Fence and M-Patrol, they still output memory in a big text file and have you go fish and look at it for yourself as to what the problems are.
Okay, so in that case, actually having a very good documentation that explains where to look and what to look for is really critical.
Yeah, it is.
And you said that Walgreens has by far the best documentation in that regard.
Yeah. I guess because I want to make sure we get the stuff covered in time. But
yeah,
there's also some really interesting static tools to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Excuse me. I know when we talk about a static tool, what we're really talking about is something that looks at the code without ever running it. And then based upon creating a parse tree and looking at certain semantic contextual problems, can then say your code has some defects in it.
Mm-hmm. So there's some sort of a disassembly of a code that's happening,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But at the code level, I mean, mm-hmm. not binary. Is it a disassembly of binary or is it disassembly of the source code?
Source code. Mm-hmm. It doesn't at all look at the target. I'm sorry, it doesn't all look at the object code. So that really doesn't. That's really not part of the analysis. Things that need to run the code are dynamic tools, and so.
Okay, so since this is static, is there any kind of instrumentation that's happening there as well?
No, none at all.
Not at all, right? So there's no library that I linked with to get the information from a malloc routine, let's say.
That's correct.
On allocation.
Yeah, that's correct.
So how is it done?
So I'll give you so the granddaddy of this is called Lint.
Lint.
And Lint has Lint been Splint. Around. Pardon me?
Lint Splint.
Yeah.
It's a... Yeah.
No. So no. Well,
it's a different.
No, you got it. So Splint is the open source takeoff of that. I'm sorry, I missed you there for a second. No, so Lint is the open source implementation. Lint came out, late '70s out of Bell Laboratories,
mm-hmm.
And they used the tool internally for a while for their projects and operations, and then the GNU implementation for that is called Splint, and that is entirely a static tool. And what it'll do is it'll check for things like null to references, because it can look at the code and decide whether a pointer has an assignment before it's been dereferenced by walking through the parse tree and figuring out times when that's possible. It also does something very interesting is it'll look for things like improper memory handling. So if you take a pointer that is stack assigned and you assign it to something that's a pointer that's globally assigned, a pointer with global scope,
mm-hmm.
it'll bark at you for that as well.
Yeah,
and that gets people, right?
Oh, absolutely.
People make that mistake frequently, or matter of fact, any stack pointer assignment that's assigned to something that persists longer than the stack, it'll mm-hmm. complain about. Mm-hmm. I use global as a way of.
Well, but then again, when you talk about static allocations and when you explicitly call malloc on things, that's fairly simple, I guess, to track in a offline. I mean, without necessarily executing the application.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have issues like allocating memory dynamically
mm-hmm.
as your application needs it, or when you have an array that you want to allocate dynamically,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that Lint would be very helpful in that scenario.
Oh, no. It doesn't. The important thing to point out is that it doesn't do things like leak detection.
Right.
It's never even designed to leak detection. Mm-hmm. It's just designed to check for semantic issues.
References.
Yeah, references and misuse, things like, again, out-of-bounds issues.
So ideally, you would use both a mix of a static and dynamic tools in trying to get the full coverage of your application. I mean, ensure that there are no memory leaks and that your code is semantically correct.
Sure. No, exactly. Because neither one of them, something like M-Patrol or Valgrind or Electric Fence couldn't possibly do what right. Lint does. And other way around, I mean, Lint can do some of the things, and they can all. They said there's a. When we started at the beginning, it's like, well, yeah. Are they mutually exclusive? They're like, no, there's an overlap, and so they do overlap.
Right.
But one of these tools definitely won't be able to replace the features and functionalities in the other.
Right. So we talked about Lint and Splint being a open source version of Lint. Mm-hmm. But there are more static analysis tools in the open source community.
Yeah, and you know what
one
a great,
in particular, right?
Yeah. Well, which one's that?
GPref.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
And that's, I think, the most popular tool or static analysis tool that I've seen amongst the customers that I talk to.
Yeah. Now the interesting thing about GPROF is that it does primarily profiling.
Right.
And by profiling, it'll tell you what line runs when and how long it took.
Well, right. So I'm thinking right now, it's not a static analysis tool. It's more of a dynamic because you do data collection at the runtime, right? And
yes.
Then analysis after you run the application.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would definitely categorize that in the dynamic crowd. I know one of the reasons we didn't sort of talk about it too much is that we were sort of interested in the memory issues, and I was sort of going down that track, and I did want to mention GPROF. I did as part of the family.
Sorry
of dynamic
for actually bringing it up right now, but it might be just a confusion again on my part because there's so many choices, right? You can open source offers so many tools that do certain things, but not let's say. Well, not. I wanted to say that 100% of what you want, but they do certain specific things that you have to be aware of when you select those tools.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the Unix tradition, right? It's do one thing and do it well. The unfortunate side effect of that is that you generally have to figure out a whole bunch of different programs in order to do, you know, some work well, right? In total. But it's interesting you bring up GPROF. And you're right, that's used by a lot of engineers, and that's a tool that you can find your inner loop, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's actually very efficient in that regard.
Yeah, and it's frighteningly easy to use, right? You know, you just compile and you just use -g, you turn on debugging, right? And you do -pg, and you run your program.
Right.
And the only real constraint is that whenever your program's done running, you need to make sure that exit is called. Mm-hmm. Because GPROF hooks the exit routine. GCC has a system where you can specify an exit routine, and what it'll do is it'll write a program called gmon.out.
Right.
And that file you can either read yourself, but there's that one I know there's a couple interesting tools. One of them is kprof, mm-hmm. which is a reader.
Yep.
And then I know TimeSys is also integrated GPROF mm-hmm. into TimeStorm as well. It'll run GPROF and scrape the data and show it on in your source code, what was run when.
So the interesting part about GPROF that you actually already mentioned, but mm-hmm. I just wanted to highlight is that you don't have to go to a specific website to get additional content for GPROF, right?
That's correct.
It's a flag and a compiler. Mm-hmm. You turn it on, and you get additional information. It's part of GCC.
Yeah, chances are it's already there.
Yeah.
I know you can compile GCC without it. I don't know many people that do that. That's kind of mean.
I think that this is a default option, right, that gets built into GCC when you just call make on GCC.
Yes. Yeah, if you want to turn off GPROF, you have to say, no profiling. I think something along those mm-hmm. lines. So it's rare that GCC is built without the profiling. Mm-hmm. So it is. It's a tool that everyone has. The unfortunate part is, there's two unfortunate parts, actually. So one unfortunate part is people don't take advantage of it, mm-hmm. which is disappointing because it's a great tool and it's right there. And the other part...
To comment on that, I think that not a lot of people are aware, I mean, newbies to developing with GCC and Linux, that GPROF is there.
So. Yeah. Yeah, they just don't know it's there. And it's sort of hidden inside of... sort of hidden inside the compiler and
all GCC, and it's overwhelming to some extent because of a number of tools and that each GCC comes with, mm-hmm. and GPROF is not really listed as one of the tools.
No,
it's really embedded inside, and it's switchable with a flag.
Yeah, yeah, that is a
yeah,
it's a good point. It's just
so it's going back to GPROF, right?
Yeah. So what is it? So one of the bad things is people don't know about it. Oh, and the other bad thing is that sometimes when people know about it, they really don't know what it does very well. Mm. And so they run it and they they just don't understand the output, and they're looking for something different, and then therefore they think the tool isn't good because they're really not sure of what it was supposed to do for them in the first place.
Right. So what you're saying is that there is no good documentation for gpref.
There's great documentation.
There is.
Yes. Again. Fantastic documentation. Visit gnu.org. Fantastic documentation. It's
okay.
You got to read it though.
Right.
So you got to read it. I have a couple other things I want to mention. I know we're again running over time wise again, but I did want to mention there's another interesting static analysis tool called Uno.
Uno.
Uno. Yeah. And that is
Italian.
For
Italian tool.
What was that?
An Italian tool?
No. I don't know. It could be, right?
Okay.
But it unpacks the uninitialized, you know, null pointer and out of bound tracking, and that is I would say reduced functionality tool, like reduced functionality that Lint has to offer. Mm-hmm. But it works rather well, and it's actually quite popular. It's out there a lot, and
I haven't heard about it.
Gets a lot of use.
I don't do enough research.
It gets a lot of use, and it's a very good, you know, lightweight tool that does just those three things and does them very well. Yeah. And the one other thing is you know, in my research to make sure I had a complete set, I ran across something very interesting called Sparse, and Sparse is a kernel project out there that does semantic checking of C. And it does that by building a parse tree of some C code, and then that's run over some other filters. And it's one of those kernel tools that was out there to do code analysis against the kernel. And so it was warning, and maybe we'll have another little podcast about that further.
Whatever. Yeah, that's actually an interesting topic, because having a parsing tool embedded inside the Linux kernel, that'll be actually neat. The question that I would have is, again, what's the overhead of Sparse, right? And how does it influence other functionality? As we know, kernel's got a lot of debugging mechanisms available to you. Mm-hmm. You can turn them on and off through configuration, but they all have some sort of influence on the overall kernel behavior.
It's fascinating. So I wanted to dig in and do a little bit more research there. One of the things that I found that was semi-interesting about this is that it has its own built-in C parser. So it does, it'll build a complete parse tree for you, and but it does so without using, you know, Lex or Yak, because, you know, Lex and Yak work on context-free grammars.
Right.
If you're into that sort of stuff, you know what that means. However, Sparse wants the context, right? It's not interested in a context-free grammar. By default, it's interested in the context in which these grammatical constructs occur. So I'll dig into that, and I'll report back maybe next podcast.
Sounds great. I think that we have another material for another podcast. But listeners, please let us know if there are other topics that you would like us to cover during our regular podcast episodes. And we would be very happy to address your questions or suggestions and dive more into topics that interest you the most.
Yeah, we get a surprising amount of email. You can drop us a line at podcast@timesys.com. That's podcast@timesys.com. And when we get a mail in, we definitely, you know, we read all of them, and we reply to the ones that we can. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we can't reply to all of them. And that really does help us figure out what to talk about for our episodes. Mm-hmm. We just love hearing from you. So,
Just wanted to add to that we have stopped doing that for some time now, but we're going to back to a routine where we're going to share some of your comments live. On our podcast, and we'll address some of the questions during our regular episodes.
Yeah, I know we've been lax with that, and so just because I guess we don't call things out specifically doesn't mean we haven't been really adjusting what we talk about whenever we get some feedback from folks saying, hey, this is important to me and I'm interested in hearing about this sort of content. So again, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to write. Just, we'd love to hear from you.
We very much would love to, yeah.
And so I think that wraps us up. And again, we're going to be talking more about tools for our next couple webinars. So if you have any suggestions, things you want to hear about, you know, let us know. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Are you new to embedded Linux or looking for a way to simplify your next project? The Linux Link service by TimeSys makes it easy to build your custom embedded Linux platform. Go to timesys.com or call 866-392-4897 to learn more.